what? I'm surprised I haven't heard you talk about the trailer to the trailer.
You know, I'm over it, man. Like, you're over there's you know, the first thing I thought was, oh, here we go again.
In a world where you only have trailers and posters to judge a movie, Jim and Ted strike out to answer the age-old question, will you see it?
All right, Ted, welcome back to Trailer Junkies and happy National Streaming Day.
Are you kidding me? Is that a thing?
Today is National Streaming Day. Yeah.
What do you do on National Streaming Day?
So from what I gather, National Streaming Day is like Roku, for example, has like boxes half price. And well, it's I don't know if it's anything, but actually on my Roku box, you know, like there's like thousands of movies streaming for free, like latest cuts and all this.
So another manufactured holiday from corporate America.
Wait, what?
Another manufactured holiday from corporate America?
It's manufactured? You mean this isn't a
Valentine's Day, you know.
Right.
Mother's Day, Father's Day. We're sandwiched in between Mother's Day and Father's Day. So.
Yeah, National Streaming Day. Well, I found it like funny too, because like our running gag is that like, yeah, we're going to watch it on streaming.
Every day is streaming day. That's the world we live in.
I just learned about it today. So unfortunately, we couldn't have warned our audience and I didn't know. But next year, I'm certainly going to be calendaring it. And I figured like Clarissa and me, we're going to take personal days from work and we're going to start like once the boys leave for school, we're going to start with like 15 to 20 hours of streaming. You know, I mean, I'm thinking like 8 to 10 movies. And I mean, I'm going to be like a South Korean gamer, like wearing a diaper. I don't even have to take a break. You know, just straight through, just pee where I sit.
That's gross. Don't do that.
I don't think so. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, what's new this week? I mean, you have anything good, bad, maybe ugly? I don't know.
So, yeah, so I was struggling with the good, bad, and the ugly, but then I was like, it's a challenge, right? Like my 3-word reviews. The good is always easy, usually, I guess. This week, Audrey got a lot of awards for her 6th grade class. So she got.
Yeah, I saw that.
It was really strange. She reads all the time in the car. I think on her way up to you guys up in Lompoc, she read 2 novels. You know? And literally, she'll read. She like speed reads and does all this stuff. So they have an awards that you give a million word reader. So if you read 1 million words in the course of a year, you get an award. So they read through the names alphabetically and we're last name Willett. So I'm waiting the end of the alphabet. You know, they're reading kids' names and then they get to Y. And I'm like, Y? What happened to Audrey? And I start looking around. Nobody knows what's going on. Audrey starts looking around. She's a little concerned. And then the teacher's done with all the 1 million word readers. And she said, and one student this year actually read 2 million words. And I was like, all right, here it is. And I get up and I'm watching. I'm hedging my bets. So I'm not going to videotape the teacher doing it right away in case maybe Audrey's the 3 million word reader. And this is some other kid, you know?
Right.
I wait. And then she finally says, you know, Audrey Willett. And I'm like, and Anne looks at me and I'm not videotaping anything. And I'm like, oh, I was totally late to the party, you know? And I start videotaping right away. And so that's the good and the ugly. None of it's bad, because I'm like, if you miss a video, it's, you know, it's life.
None of it's bad. Your kid's reading 2 million words. I mean, geez, as a 6th grader.
I said, you know, that's more than I've read in my lifetime, maybe. I don't know. unless books on tape count, I think that's more words than I've fallen asleep to.
Right.
And then the bad, I don't know. It's hard to come up with the bad.
You don't need bad.
Right? You don't need bad every week. Let's not focus on any bad stuff.
Before I get to what I wanted to say, I mean, serious congratulations. That's a ton of reading. I mean, especially for, you know, whatever. What is she, a 12-year-old, I guess?
Yeah, 12, yeah.
Yeah, 12-year-old girl, you know, like 2 million words. I don't even know how you track that, but, you know, they probably figure it's probably an estimate based on, like, the books and what the text is and everything. But I don't know. There's probably some Google algorithm that's involved with analog. Who knows? No, that is, man. That's a huge congratulations. And I saw some other awards on Instagram. What were those?
She got social science. They don't call it social studies anymore. They call it social science. And then honor roll.
Oh, okay. Like humanities or something.
Yeah. I mean, it is social studies. It's what social studies used to be.
Yeah. Cool.
Everything's a science now.
Right. Well, very cool. Yeah, that's exciting. It's a proud time to be a parent. Yeah, so tomorrow we're going to a wedding in Santa Barbara, I guess is the good.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, you know, doesn't get better than a wedding in a park and hopefully sunny Santa Barbara. It's been pretty chilly here, you know? Like, I mean, definitely coats and jackets and the boys go to work. Well, work. The boys go to school. You know, I ride them on the bicycle and stuff. They got mittens on, you know? Here, like, everywhere in the country is, like, hot and humid. Like, we're, like, you know, 45 and windy.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Are you getting in your suit and clear center dress and you're going to ride on the bike down to Santa Barbara?
No, actually, we are driving. We do have a car, yes. But I know I talk about bikes a lot. But at the same time, it's a very casual wedding. So I'm probably going to be wearing like Dockers and, you know, like Chuck E. Taylor's and a Hawaiian shirt or something. And I think Clarissa is just going to wear like kind of a spring sundress. Timmy has the stereotypical tuxedo tie t-shirt. And then I have Mikey's probably going to wear like, you know, Thomas the Train or something. I don't know. But yeah, it's going to be one of those more or less, you know, like laid back, no big deal kind of a, you know, weddings where I think the groom is even going to be in flip-flops. You know, he's wearing like, you know, the rainbow flip-flops or something. I don't even know, but like it's totally laid back. So I'm not worried about it. And then the reception, awesome. I think, is going to be at the parents' house, his dad's house. And I mean, I think it's only like a 40 person wedding or something, or, you know, so it's something along chill. Those lines. Really small, really chill, close knit, you know, like everybody kind of know everybody. Like there's nothing, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun, I think, you know, a little house party almost.
Yeah.
So yeah, looking forward to it.
Are they happy sharing the day with the royal couple or not even thinking about that at all?
I was thinking about that. Like, it's one of those things where, like, you got to wonder, is the person giving the toast going to even mention, like, you know, like, there's two weddings today, and here's the important wedding. You know, there was this other wedding that happened, like, nobody cares about because, like, even the dad's not walking her down the aisle.
Oh.
You know, I guess you got to get that dig in there, right?
Right, yeah.
You know, let me just say one thing. And now, Ted owes me an apology. From North Carolina, a 6'6 guard, Michael Jordan. He's still relevant, man. ESPN what? And Netflix is making a 10-part series in 2019.
Yeah, you're right. I do owe you an apology. You say North Carolina, like that's what he's known for or something.
No, he's known for the Bulls.
Yeah. I apologize.
Like, I just cracked up. You're like, no one cares about Michael Jordan. And then, like, the next week, like, this thing gets announced. And I was just like, brilliant. I got to get after Ted for this one.
I still say he's, as far as marketing goes, he is a marketing god. And it's not all him, I know that, but just the idea of his name. All I was saying was that his name means something different to this generation. And I think the people making movies and making documentaries, they're like our age. So it makes sense that they would want to relive and revitalize Michael Jordan, the person. I'll definitely throw the video into this of they had a big anniversary for the shoe. And they built this huge complex. They built a half court of a bunch of LED like monitors, and they built them into the floor, into the walls. So you're in a box. You're in a half court box that's all LED monitors, and it allowed you to retrace footsteps of great Michael Jordan plays through history.
Oh, wow!
And you could dial it up, and you could put on the new shoes, the new Jordans, or you could put on the classic Jordans. And it had They had a stadium set up where you could play like your Tar Heel, like you were saying, North Carolina, and you could do his, you know, championship shot in North Carolina, and all the people are wearing like 70s, late 70s garb and stuff in the audience.
Yeah,
and then
yeah,
they flip us, and they have like lights on the ground to show you where to stand.
And where is this?
It was in New York. They did it for like, I want to say the 25th anniversary of the shoe or something like that.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it was a marketing promotion that they put together.
Yeah.
But when I found this, I had to show it to the company I work for. And it's just an amazing undertaking. So the BTS will go up on our website after this.
But yeah, it's funny though that, you know, we were talking the one week and it's like, he's not even relevant. And then all of a sudden all this stuff about Michael Jordan comes out and I'm just like, what the, you know? So I love the trailers this week.
Good.
You picked some good ones, you know, and hey, I want to say though that week in, week out, like I can't commend Ted more than anything for the movies he picks and the trailers. And I just want to keep inflating his ego so I never have to pick more trailers.
Well, I will. Okay. So now I remember what the bad was. The bad was I started.
But I never pick them.
No, I started a new role at work.
Oh, okay.
And it has really like zapped my energy on Twitter and on doing all the extra stuff.
No,
during
I get
the
it,
week
man.
For us.
I get it.
So thank you for all of your hard work editing and putting it all together. And, you know.
Well, I like to think Ted, like, designs the show and I create the show.
Ah, sweet.
You know, Ted puts it together and he's kind of the big picture guy. And then I put the details together and it kind of just comes together. And I don't know. I think it works out.
Yeah.
No, it's very cool. Very cool. So how about we start at mile 22?
Okay. Mile 22. So by the title, what do you think we have here? Mile 22.
Something military.
It seems to hold a little true. Mile 22.
It does. Yeah. No, I mean, it's like CIA-ish.
It's a little CIA. It's a little 24, also numbers. It's on the fringes of military.
Yeah. Zero Dark 30, you know. And
but I love this combo. This is one of my favorite combos in movies right now. Some would say De Niro. And
what's the combo?
I'm getting to it. I'm warming up into it.
Okay.
What is it? Coppola De Niro. Some would say Coppola Leo. There's a bunch of director-actor duos out there. But this one, Mark Wahlberg has found Peter Berg. And together, they've made a lot of movies.
Oh, Peter Berg is like, I mean, the legacy cell there is just huge.
Right? It's tons. It's tons of stuff. And I was kind of concerned. It seemed like with Patriot Day and with, you know, BP or, you know, it wasn't called BP. It was called, what is it? The oil rig movie?
Oil rig movie?
Horizon, that oil rig.
I'm not sure what you're talking about.
I'm a huge Peter Berg fan, but I didn't like his more socially active stuff.
Oh, I gotcha. Oh, you're talking about the oil rig that kind of blew in the Gulf.
Yeah.
Off like Houston-ish area, whatever, or Louisiana, whatever it
Louisiana,
was.
Louisiana, right.
Yeah.
But yeah, so he did Lone Survivor.
Lone Survivor was good.
I like Lone Survivor a lot. He also directed a bunch of The Leftovers, which I was a huge fan of.
But, you know, my initial reaction is that it's kind of like a wild action movie, lots of gunplay, explosions, you know? And then I put my emotions aside, and then I thought about it like as a cinematic movie.
Right.
And it tends to come across as a simple story. You know, I mean, it's just one of those like secret assassin CIA movies that don't, you know, where they train the guy who doesn't exist. Okay, we have to go find the radioactive isotope that's going to like level 6 cities.
Right.
It's Matt Damon's Treadstone to Marky Mark's
Hey Funky Bunch
Overwatch. You know, the informant surrenders, but he's not going to give up the details until he gets what he wants, you know, and then.
Oh, he surrenders in the most violent surrendering ever.
Yeah, no, you're so right, because I was going to say that when you have a shallow story, how do you fill the void to keep people interested? You have awesome and cool choreographed fight scenes, you know, that to just distract you from the encounter of or the lack of encounter. It's like he does the backwards up the wall kick flip thing where Jackie Chan. Jeez, Charlie Chan. Oh, number one son, you know, like, I mean, how like terrible is that, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, talk about racist, but we'll get that in the Black Klansman. But Jackie Chan does the, like, I'll run at the wall and then just do my flip.
Yeah.
Where I don't know the actor's name, but he does like the run up the wall and do like the forward flip, you know, like to kick your ass.
Right. No, it's amazing.
And then the last critique, one word, heat.
Oh, yes. So I agree. It has a heat feel when they're in the street.
That's right. Yeah, right there. That scene.
But if you've seen The Kingdom,
mm-hmm.
The Kingdom is Peter Berg. The street scene in The Kingdom was more impactful to me than the street scene in Heat. Because when they're pulling Jason Bateman out of that space, it's just like they get so gritty and so down in it. You know, I think in Heat, for me, there, Michael Mann, a lot of times it during Heat, I love Heat, don't get me wrong, one of the top 25 movies of my lifetime. Can't wait for my kids to be old enough to show it to them. One of those movies. But I think there are a lot of his scenes are carried out just a little too long. I think he could have had a little bit of more of an editor. He could have gotten it done in a shorter amount of time.
So what you're saying is my anticipation of your three-word review, or maybe not anticipation, but more prediction.
Oh, you're not going to get anywhere close to this three-word review.
Well, I'm learning that now, yes.
Go ahead.
But my prediction was Born Meets Heat.
Ah.
Not going to happen, or what?
That's nice. I like that.
Okay. Hey, at least I got a nod from Ted. I mean, the three-word master, right?
That's a good three-word review for you. I'm far from a master. But I continue to practice. As all my meditation teaches me, it's not about mastery. It's about continuing to return to the state.
The review doctor. He practices his reviews. Right, I gotcha.
But I'm surprised I haven't heard you talk about the trailer to the trailer.
You know, I'm over it, man. Like, there's you know, the first thing I thought was, oh, here we go again.
It's one of the worst ones. It really harkens back to the House of the Clock and its walls, where
right.
The main character's talking, and they're talking, you know, lines that they're going to be saying only less than a minute into the whole thing, and that to me now, that's like fingers on a chalkboard. I can't listen to that. Just show us the action. That'll keep me there. Just show me the action. I don't need Marky Mark.
Hey, funky bunch.
Talking about what he's gonna do, you know?
Bottom line, like, I just don't want to like bore people with that anymore. I mean, everybody knows.
But I think there's a good way to do it and a wrong way to do it.
You're right about that. And maybe that's what we should point out, like maybe come future episodes, is that this trailer to the trailer like sucked. And this trailer to the trailer was like a good way to do a trailer to the trailer. You know, right. I mean, I don't even know how you do that, but.
Right. And I think you hate them all. So it's just like equally, I hate them.
I think the reason why I don't like it is because it just calls to the forefront of how our society has just become so like lame, short attention span, like to the max though. It's not even like you can't handle 2 minutes of a trailer.
You can't handle
2 seconds of a 2 minute trailer. So we have to like throw this tease because we know you're going to click away and at least we got something in there. Like, are people really that not into being attracted to something? I mean, I don't know. It's just, I think that's what's more annoying. It's not that It's not that the trailer to the trailer is annoying. It's that they're trying to meet people where they are. And it's hard to believe that people can't sustain their attention for literally 2 seconds.
Right.
You know, and that's what's so annoying about it, I think, is just meeting people where they are, and where people are is what does the future hold at that point?
Yeah. And then from the marketer's perspective, I would say if you're into it, you're going to stick around for it.
Oh, yeah.
But if you're not into it, we can still have a chance to grab you. So I think they figure that the turning people off is actually a much harder thing to do with the trailer to the trailer. We're critical of it because we're watching all these trailers all the time and trying to do it in a critical way. So I think we have a higher sensitivity to it, but I do think that there is a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. And I think that using dialogue that is expository, or if it's more than just a cool thing to say, then just leave it out of that trailer to the trailer. That's all. I guess we should just leave it at that.
It's funny, though, because this week I was like, I'm not even bringing it up, you know, because I don't want to bore people. And here we just spent the past 10 minutes on the trailer to the trailer. But well, whatever. I mean, I think it needs to be talked about, though, at some point. I mean, you know, because I think it's not necessarily the trailer to the trailer that's the issue. I think it's a greater or maybe not a greater, but I think it's a bigger picture of what's happening to us in a sociologic sense, to say that our populace and moviegoers and TV watchers and YouTube viewers and whatever we are, you know, we have this thing where people just struggle to pay attention to something for more than a few seconds. I mean, what does that say for book publishers and bloggers? And I mean, if you can't hang out for just a couple of seconds, God, I feel so bad for my kids.
Yeah, I don't know. It's true. Did you catch I felt there was another nod at the beginning of the actual trailer. All the montage of the little set pieces that we have throughout the very beginning of it. Did you get another feeling of another Boston icon of our era?
No, I didn't.
It hit me like The Accountant, you know, the Ben Affleck movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Marky Mark.
Hey, funky bunch.
And Ben Affleck and Matt Damon, they're all from Boston, you know, and they're all in... a lot of them were in The Departed. I guess Ben wasn't in The Departed. But the way that they show the puzzle with no pictures, they show the type of books that he has, and then they have him snapping a rubber band on his wrist.
Well, I wanted to ask you, what's the metaphor behind the rubber band on the wrist?
I thought you would have more to say about that, because it felt like it was all somebody who's on the spectrum, the autism spectrum, and he's either snapping himself into or out of the focusing on something.
Oh, see, wow, that's brilliant. And then maybe that goes back to when Lauren Cohen, when she said something, you know, and I'm paraphrasing, she said something to the effect of, you know, how are you doing? And he's like, I'm great, and I'm not great, and you're great because you're mentally unstable or whatever she said, you know? And
yeah.
And maybe that's part of it is he is on the spectrum because maybe he is mentally unstable. I mean, not to say that people on the spectrum are mentally unstable, but what I mean is he doesn't see the danger for what it is.
Right.
You know, because he's so into himself trying to complete the mission, he doesn't recognize what's around him.
Did you see The Accountant?
Oh, yeah, yeah, I did. It was great.
Yeah, love that movie. And that to me, that's what the type of books that they're looking at, and the puzzle with no picture, that was a cue to that.
I honestly don't see how it fits into something like this movie, because it's not a creative movie. It's a military movie.
I think everybody's trying to make a creative movie, you know?
No. What I mean is, I don't mean the movie's not creative. I mean the story is, we need to find the missing isotopes. We need to get him at this mile. The plane's going to be down for 5 minutes. Where's the creativity in that? Maybe in how you get it there. And I don't know, but
it's how you get it there. And it's the characters that you put into the situation, you know?
Yeah.
Every character is going to react differently. and you want to build your character so that your audience believes that this is how this character would react. You want to give your audience enough context to let them go along with the idea of believing this character is this calm under pressure. You know, this character can think on his feet and move around in this way, you know?
But I mean, aside from that, though, I mean, yeah, it's like if you're into action and thriller, I mean, it's going to be thrilling and it's going to be action.
It's definitely going to be all that. Did you notice the H Brothers card?
No. Did I miss a lot in this movie? It sounds like I missed a lot in this one. Or not movie, but trailer.
The trailer has a lot going on. You know, there's a lot of nuanced stuff. And STX Films is the American production company, but it looks like there is an Asian production company that's involved in it, and they're called H Brothers.
Okay.
And I wonder, you know, we've talked before about Chinese co-productions, so I should have done more research to this H Brothers. But again, they go to this place where they have a lower third in a trailer where it says U.S. Embassy, Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Like, why do we have to be this upfront and explicit with it, with the audience of the trailer? Is it something that's written in? You know, I know that the co-productions with China have to have a certain amount of Chinese actors, Chinese crew, Chinese scenes in it. I'm wondering if the trailering has to follow some kind of dictate.
Well, maybe that's in the contract that they wrote out.
Yeah.
Well, and even if you're going to shoot in China and China, there's some stipulation, but I mean, that's probably just the way the contract's written. Hey, we want to shoot in this part of the world, and that part of the world, wherever it is, decides to say, well, okay, you could shoot here. It doesn't have to be Southeast Asia, but it could be anywhere. And it's like, yeah, I want to shoot here. Okay, you could shoot here, but you're going to require like using, you know, our grips and our camera guys. And it's just going to require a certain percentage of backlot people and yeah, in front of camera people and production company and all this stuff just to walk in the door, because you know, you have union contracts and you have, you know, and you're, and I mean, you go there, shoot photography with like a couple of things and do a couple of YouTube videos. Nobody's going to say boo about it.
Right.
But you're going in multi-million dollar corporation doing multi-million dollar work that's going to bring in like huge amounts of money, international release and stuff. Like, yeah, you got to play the political game.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the way I see that.
More to come on this. I met somebody at a wake a couple of weeks ago who has a deal with a Chinese production company. So I'm going to tap into him a little bit and see if I can find more stuff about that.
Bad way to meet somebody, but hey, at least you met him, you know? I don't know. You have much more to say about this one? I think I'm kind of tapped out.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it. Like I said, I love The Kingdom. I love the Peter Berg. I've been a big fan from him from the beginning, from Very Bad Things back in the day, and then all the way through all of his TV stuff. I was surprised that I never got into Friday Night Lights. You know, I really wanted to like it, and it was just a...
I never did either. As a football fan, yeah.
I know, it's hard. I think it was something about it being very Texas. Playing high school football, we always played on Saturdays, so it was not a Friday night thing on the East Coast.
You know, yeah, that's the thing, too. You're right about that. I mean, growing up in Chicago and stuff, it was always Saturdays. I mean,
yeah,
like around... You know, I graduated high school in 89, and around the time I graduated, they would have the occasional Friday night game.
Yeah.
I'm sure nowadays they're all Friday night.
Well, even here they do high school. Some high schools do it on Thursday night. Some people have Thursday night games.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a hot, it's a Texas thing, this Friday night.
Yeah. And the high school I work at, I mean, it's always a Friday night, you know? And
oh, cool.
And I think high school somehow, like maybe through TV marketing or something, high school somehow found its way to Friday. College is Saturday and the yeah, NFL is Sunday. You know, it's like kind of the hierarchy or lowerarchy of where you get landed in media. So who knows? But Peter Berg has done some, I mean, when I read down his laundry list of movies, I mean, wow, I was really impressed. I didn't realize he did so many just top rate first run movies that, you know, I've probably seen half of them at a minimum. And I can't tell you a producer, director that I've seen at least half of their movies.
Yeah, no, he stayed in contemporary space, you know? Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's about it for this movie.
I've been waiting with bated breath. What is your 3-word review?
So I went a little meta with this one. I'm a big fan of Lauren Cohen. I love her in Walking Dead. And I know we can't give any spoilers because you and I are both not caught up with Walking Dead. So we don't know if she's alive or dead. But I was telling you that I think, you know, a lot of people can do movies on the side. So she could still be alive in Walking Dead. We don't know.
Well, we're about 6 episodes. We kind of put Walking Dead on hold for a while, but we got caught up. Well, I should say we got caught up. We're in the latest season that's been released, and mm-hmm. then we're about 4 episodes, maybe, if I had to guess, from like the finale. So
okay,
she's still around. I don't know where she is. People listening are probably screaming at their like you know their iPod classics. But that was my question during the week. You know, I'm watching the thing and I'm like, Ted, I haven't caught up yet. Is she dead? Is she alive? Can someone do a movie and a TV show concurrently?
Yes.
And Ted's reply was, well, I think they can.
You know. So my 3-word review for Mile 22 is Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
So Alice is the name of Lauren Cohen's character in this movie.
Okay.
And Wonderland was one of my favorite Peter Berg TV shows. And it lasted for 2 episodes on air. And I was a devoted fan of it before.
After 2 episodes?
It only lasted 2 episodes. And it's got Jeremy Piven as a insane asylum patient screaming his head off about nothing and everything. Pretending to be a doctor, pretending to be a patient. And it played like ER or Chicago Hope. Back, you know, those dramas, those hospital dramas back when they were very popular. And it was an insane asylum. And it was shown from both the perspectives of the doctors as well as the perspective of the patients. So when the patients were hallucinating, you got to share as the audience in their hallucination, which included like miniature rhinoceros running across the floor of the hospital and stuff. So Alice in Wonderland.
Wow, I never heard of that show, but for 2 episodes, like, what do I got to lose? I mean, there's little investment. I may as well try and watch. You know, the funny thing is, people are going to hear this and they'll be like, you know what, I'll watch it. They're going to see this huge spike and then someone's going to be like, dude, let's bring it back.
They shot more than 2 episodes, but they only played 2 episodes in the initial run. And then as I was looking around for it, trying to find it, they said that one of those chillers or one of the Universal other cable networks aired the whole season. Like one day they aired the whole thing. So they had a whole like either 12 or 20 or some odd episodes that they had shot.
Wow. I wonder if we can find it somewhere.
I'll keep looking for it. I was looking for it all week this week, but
yeah, I was going to say that would be pretty cool though. Some like weird, like one off thing, but yet all this stuff, like, you know, it's like finding the cans on the shelf and, you know, you pull them out and run them and you're like, wow, here we found a gold mine, you know? And
well, and Netflix should just go and buy it and just like, you know, they can stick it on there in their service.
Yeah, very cool. All right. So you want to take a break before we get to Black Klansman?
All right, let's take a break.
Coming up on Trailer Junkies Podcast. I remember going like to a 7th and 8th grade Christian school and they would, you know, this is like mid-80s, and they were just so anti like rock and roll, anti movies. They were, you know, it was like this fundamental Baptist, Southern Baptist Christian school that I don't know how I got roped into, but I escaped. If you enjoy our trailer reviews, or even if you hate them, let us know. We love feedback. We're on Twitter at @TJunkiesPodcast. And Instagram at Trailer Junkies Podcast. You can also comment on the episodes at trailerjunkiespodcast.com. Our email is info@trailerjunkiespodcast.com. And you could also leave us a review in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's get back to it. All right, we're back. All right, so Black Klansman, what's your initial thoughts?
My initial thoughts on this is, you know, I'm extremely happy that Spike Lee is doing a movie like this. I know he was kind of on the outs with Hollywood and Hollywood production, and he was complaining about having to raise money and raising money for the kinds of movies that he wanted to make over the past 5 years or something like that. And then I saw he did like a play adaptation for Amazon.
Well, why was he on the outs, would you say? I mean, I haven't really heard much about it, but, and at the same time, I haven't seen, well, maybe not seen, but I haven't heard many of his movies that have come out lately.
Yeah.
That probably explains why.
Yeah, I think he was just having trouble raising money, and he wanted to keep in the, it's called Passover, sorry. Passover was the name of the movie that he made for Amazon.
Okay.
And it's a very interesting movie because it has no sets. It's like a black box theater play where they have very simple, like two guys at a street light talking to a cop, you know, and it plays out it's all about the actor's portrayal of a couple guys and a cop meeting together on a street one night. But it's such a departure from the big budget theatrical releases. I think the theatrical space, as we talked about last week, it's missing this cinematic sweet spot. The cinematic sweet spot for theatrical releases has become this ultra high budget. You know, if it's under $100 million, you know, some studios don't want to even touch it. And then if you're even going to be at all socially conscious, which Spike Lee is, you know, in his bones, then you're going to be pushed even further to the margins of like addressing an audience or attracting an audience. So, you know, as he gets into this space where he's going to streaming services and raising money, it was great to see that, you know, Jordan Peele and then Blumhouse Production, that horror company, got together and with a small art house like Focus Features, we're able to put this together for Spike, get it theatrically released, get it out into the theatrical space, which I'm sure Spike Lee loves, you know?
It strikes me as a comedy, which I think it is.
Oh, totally comedy, yeah. Total social justice comedy, you know?
Yeah, social justice comedy. And initially I was like, is this a comedy or is it not? So I watched it a couple of times and I came to the conclusion, yes, it is a comedy. And there's a lot of subtle comedic moments and there's a lot of coded language.
Mm.
So when you look at, you know, a lot of the things they talk about, well, for the first thing is, so the police chief is sitting with, and I looked up his name. I tried to look up the actor. I couldn't find him. I don't know what his name is. I apologize. But, you know, he said to John David Washington, the main character.
Yeah.
He said, we never had a black police officer in this city. We really need one. You'd be a good one. And then he shows up and there's the sign that says like minorities are encouraged to apply. Right. So, yeah. And the first thing I have is the white police chief. I'm assuming he's the police chief. And then you have the black, what, mayor or like council member? I don't even know what he would be, you know?
Yeah, like a representative.
Yeah, you know? And then he's telling the black guy, you know, John David Washington, he's saying like, we've never had a black guy in this position, but yet a black guy's hiring him for this position. So like, well, how does he get to that position if the town's so racist? You know, and then the police chief, which I fully believe in the movie is going to be revealed as a part of the Klan. I just have a feeling because like he just sits pissed off the whole time he talks to a black guy and he's always questioning like, well, how do you know this is going to work? You know, kind of a thing. And then Washington always says, he's always like, well, another coded language, which I'm assuming is coded somehow, but I don't really know how, you know, like I didn't hear enough, but he says like, well, with the right white man, we can do anything. And I'm thinking like, so if you look at the current president, Donald Trump, and you look at an LBJ who essentially was the civil rights president, you know, well, with the right white man, we could do anything, you know? And I'm thinking like, well, it just seems so coded to me. Like, I don't know where it's coming from and where it's going. It seems bigger than what it is on its face.
Definitely. And I think my angle on that is the whole idea of the interwoven scenes where they go to what are Black Panther rallies, or, you know, it seems like they definitely have this other side where they're both, you know, this cop is trying to play both sides, and actually he's not equally as disturbed by the Black Power space. But it is interesting that I felt like they spent a lot of time in the trailer on it. You know, it's not up for very long, but it is interesting to me to try to give an access point maybe to other people that are maybe uncomfortable with the whole idea of bringing up the Klan again or the KKK, and then like to have the counterpoint of the Black Panthers or this other power thing, and to have, you got it, you remembered it, you said his name.
Oh, John David Washington.
Yeah, to have John David Washington talk about power for all the people, it allows him to play it in the middle. He can play down the center, and maybe he's more accessible to more people that way, which seems like a weird hedge for a Spike Lee movie. But maybe it's not a hedge. Maybe it's just taking a little bit of the edge off of it.
Right. And I did want to mention that too, because like there's a juxtaposition there where they say, you know, white power.
Yeah.
And then they show Black power. But there's other parts where they say power to all the people.
Exactly. And that goes to your coded language too.
Right. They have like the white racist saying like, that's it. It's white people. It's, you know, whatever the Klan thinks. And then you have the Black Panther. Well, I'm not saying they're Black Panther, but let's just assume that's kind of the where they align. Mm-hmm. And then they say like the Black power. And then you have like the middle side of it saying like, well, how about power to everybody? Right. Power to all people. Like, we're all just here. And I think that's kind of the message that's going to come out of this movie that Spike Lee's trying to say, is that, you know, everybody has their sides, and everybody takes side in their, whether we're Black or we're white. Or, well, and then they go on about, you know, they did talk about like Chinese and Jews and whatever it was.
Right.
You know, but maybe the overarching message is to say that everybody kind of has their prejudices and biases to some degree, but like in the end, like it's power to everybody. You know, Spike Lee's a Black guy, of course, but like overall, it's just saying that like, hey, who cares?
Yeah.
Power to everybody. Let's just stop choosing sides on color and come together as a people.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, it seems like kind of a funny movie. It's cleverly done.
It has to be. You know, I love the idea how quickly Jordan Peele has gone from an actor to a retired actor, and then a director, you know, Academy Award nominated actor. I mean, a director, and then now he's a producer. You know, it's complete full circle.
The one question I have is, I want to know what the questions are for the Jewish lie detector. And as someone who's not Jewish, I wonder how I would score on it. I mean, I'm just curious, you know, like, yeah. I have Jewish friends, but.
But how much do you know?
What if you just continuously say, I don't know. I mean, like. It's just so bad. Like, I think that's where some of the comedic stuff comes in. And I think it's going to be like a lot of harsh comedy where you're going to laugh, but you're going to be like, ooh, man, you know, and like you're going to kind of, you're like, your butt's kind of pucker, you know, like, you're going to be like, ooh, why did they have to say it that way? That's just so uncomfortable, you yeah. know, and yeah. then you're going to look at the guy next to you and you're going to be like, oh my God, there's a Black guy. I feel so weird, you know, like, and then he's going to look at you and be like, you know, like, well, he's going to feel the same thing. Like, what the hell is going on here? And at the end, we're just going to high-five each other.
One of my favorite Key and Peele's skits is the Gremlins 2 skit. I don't know. Did you get a chance to watch that?
I never did.
Oh, I said it to you. So Jordan Peele is a script doctor. He comes in and he comes in as Star Magic Jackson Jr. And during I don't know if you've seen Gremlins 2, but Gremlins 2 has some crazy, crazy stuff in it. And he just goes around this writing room and he talks to each one of those writers and he has them give like a snippet. And at the end of it, you know, the head Key is the head writer and he goes, all right, forget everything he said. None of that stuff's in there. And it turns out every single thing they discuss in that whole skit is all in the movie. So I love the idea that he could be walking around a set with Spike Lee and giving him like notes during the thing, during Black Klansman, about like maybe we'd have lightning bolts coming out of his eyes, or if they were googly eyed, you know, Klansman or something like that.
No, but when he started talking about, or when he started calling the David Duke with the white voice, it totally reminded me of Sorry to Bother You. No, it looks funny. You think you're going to see it or what?
I'm going to see it. And as we do weekly, I don't know. I'm probably not going to go to the theater to see it.
See, National Streaming Day.
National Streaming Day. There you go. I'm interested in Topher Grace. You know, it feels like he's not in a lot of stuff much anymore. And I like him as an actor, so I'm interested in seeing him. Yeah, interesting story. Definitely want to see it.
Cool. All right, three-word review. What do you have?
All right, three-word review for this one. I really wanted to be like Star Magic Jackson Jr. produces, but that's so many words. It's like five words.
Yeah, and it doesn't work. It needs three.
So this is the one that I struggle with most of the day today, trying to come up with something or along those lines. Script. Yeah, I do not have one for this. Do you have a guess for what I was going to do for this one?
Do I have a guess? No, I don't. I mean, I was thinking like, well, yeah, I'm at a loss. I wasn't even there. You have nothing? Maybe we'll come back to it.
Okay, we'll come back to it.
I think we'll go with a little Bohemian Rhapsody, gentlemen.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, Bohemian Rhapsody.
So, Ted, did you know I'm Bohemian?
I did not know you're Bohemian.
100%, man. No, I'm not. No, actually, 100% true. I'm 50% Bohemian. So, my dad's side was from Bohemia, you know, now the Czech Republic.
Uh-huh.
And all I got to say is I am jealous you lived in the motherland for about 6 months.
That
yeah, you
awesome.
Did. You were there. So we traced Clarissa's heritage back and my heritage to see, you know, just because my father-in-law always says he's Czech and everything. And so we figured, let's see where they come from, you know, and we go back and pretty much it's about the exact same place.
That's crazy.
Though we haven't locked down like the town or city or anything, but pretty much Bohemia for both of us.
But Frank also has Viking in him.
Yeah. But I also have Italian, you know, and stuff. I'm half Italian, half Bohemian. I mean, that's the way it goes. But the cool thing is, though, like, Clarissa and I mean, I hope we're not distant cousins, but maybe we are. Who knows? I don't know. Our kids turned out okay, so I guess it doesn't matter now.
Right. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, but no, the cool thing is, though, like, I was thinking, like, wow, this is cool. Like, this movie, you live there, we're from there. We definitely want to visit there.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't yet, but, you know, we definitely will. Great soundtrack, and Queen is a British rock band. Who knew?
It's amazing. Amazing soundtrack, amazing movie. I love, you know, as I did the research into this one, I actually wanted to not do this one this week.
Really? What?
Because it's a teaser trailer, it's a first trailer. We're gonna get
a
more in-depth, longer trailer as you know the months progress over the summer.
So we recap it.
Yeah, we'll recap it. But I was so enthralled by looking into the stopping and the starting of it. I remember when Sacha Baron Cohen was up to play Freddie Mercury. So that felt so right when they talked about Rami doing it. I thought, oh, can he pull it off? You know, he's the little, he's a little pipsqueak from Mr. Robot. Like, he didn't think I didn't think he had it in him to go as big as Freddie Mercury. And to me, Sacha Baron Cohen, like, he exudes the same kind of bravado that you kind of got from watching Freddie Mercury. So you could see Sacha Baron Cohen just by thinking about it. You just in your mind, you could see him strutting around the stage like Freddie Mercury. It's not a stretch. And yet when Rami Malek does it, it's phenomenal. He does a great job with this role. Takes me completely out of it. I don't know if I'm looking at footage. I don't know if I'm looking at, you know, the movie footage or real concert footage. And it's amazing. I can't wait to see this. And I think it's in November. It's the first week in November, November 2nd, it comes out. I want to go see this in the theater. I feel like this is one where I want to hear the sound. I want to have the concert experience in the movie theater.
The funny thing about it, though, is like you just covered a bunch of stuff I wanted to talk about. So the first thing is, you know, we'll back up a little bit.
Of course.
Do you think that they're going to have actual footage of concerts like live at Wembley in 86, for example, you know, or whatever? Or is it all going to be cinematic?
I think the crowd shots have to be real crowd shots, you know?
The only reason I ask is for the exact reason that you said. I can't tell whether this is actual footage,
right,
or if this is just a movie. You know, I mean, it's so well done that, yeah, I mean, you took the words out of my mouth.
It's amazing. And there's that dirty over the shoulder where you're looking over Freddie Mercury's shoulder at, like, what is it, Wembley, I think you said, Wembley Stadium.
Yeah.
And it's just massive people. And it was.
And this, he looks just like him.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's amazing. Incredible. How much he looks like him. Did you hear about the Sacha Baron Cohen thing?
No, I didn't, actually. Okay. That's why when you were saying it, I was like, wait, let me look this up really quick. What's going on here?
Oh, there's tons of behind-the-scenes stuff on with this movie. I love, you know, like, two of the main members of Queen were very involved in the making of this movie.
Yeah.
Basically, they had, like, right, you know, they had like editorial rights and they had rights over the creation of this story, and they had the story rights. So they had a lot of control, and it went through a lot of turmoil. I think Bryan Singer was originally on it as director, and it went back and forth. And I guess there was some friction between Rami Malek and Bryan Singer. So it seems like Rami won, which is strange. You know, Bryan Singer is a huge director. I don't know how he's faring in the environment where we are, you know, as far as his off-screen escapades that may or may not. I have no personal information on that, but he was not swept up in the Me Too movement. So I don't know if it's just he's just a difficult director to work with and came to a head, and they went with Rami and the director that they had before Bryan Singer. But in the end, the stuff that we have in this trailer to look at is amazing, and it can wash away all of that crazy drama.
I find it funny too that Mike Myers is somehow in the cast. And it's like, wait, don't tell me they're gonna bring in Wayne's World somehow, right? I mean, how does that even work?
Good night and party on.
Party on, Wayne.
Party on, Garth.
It's Wayne's World. Wayne's World. Party time. Excellent.
And we're out.
The other question I have, though, is, and the answer is probably yes to all of it, is this a story about Queen and Freddie Mercury? Is it a story about, like, Freddie Mercury by himself? Or is it strictly about the production of Bohemian Rhapsody? All of the above? I mean, I'm thinking kind of all of the above.
Oh, yeah, it's Queen. It's overall Queen. Queen is mainly Freddie Mercury, you know? He was such a huge force behind it. It's you know, it's got to be him.
So at dinner tonight, we listened to I'm not going to say the best of, but a best of album for Queen. And we listened to, like, you know, cut after cut after cut that was just every song you heard is just, wow, that's Queen. Oh, my God, that's Queen, too. And wow, that's Queen, you know, over and over. It, you know, it was just incredible how many songs you can relate to Queen, whether or not you're a Queen fan. And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that don't even realize they're Queen fans until they hear the songs. And then they're like, oh, wait, I know that song.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's like, wait, that's Queen? You know, like one of those things. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a Queen movie, probably emphasis on Freddie Mercury. And then the underlying story is just going to be Bohemian Rhapsody, because, like, what other name are you going to name a movie about Queen? You know, I mean, yeah. I think the name is really great.
I think the name is great. And I chose the poster for this week again. For all the things that you just said, what is this movie about? Right? The movie's about Bohemian Rhapsody. It's half of Freddie Mercury's face, and he's got Queen in his mirror sunglasses, you know? It's like this perfect blend of all of the things. And to me, this poster is like the most American iconic poster. If you look at some of the international posters, it has a bigger shot of Wembley and the wide shot of Freddie Mercury, because I think internationally that's what plays better, is the crowds and all of the, you know, the longer shot. But in America, it's all about that close up. I think I've said that, you know, for the first weeks.
I think what's going to happen is they're going to play out the story of Queen up until he gets sick with AIDS or HIV. Mm-hmm. And then that's where the movie pretty much ends, I have a feeling. And then what do they call it, like, when they have the cards at the end where they just have, like, the...
Oh, yeah.
Freddie Mercury, like, contracts, you know, HIV, dies symptoms of AIDS, you know, and this is his legacy. And then they have, like, those just cards at the end. I think that's how it's going to end.
I don't even think it's going to go that far. Like you said, I think it ends at Wembley, you know, it ends at this beautiful high point, you know, where it's just like...
Oh, so you're thinking it's not even going to go back, it's not even going to go the whole way.
No, I think it's the rise to the peak and then leaving it there, you know, because I think that's really the Zoroaster way, you know.
Go out on top, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if I were doing a movie like this, I don't see the, you know, like you said, put it in a card if you have to, or don't even mention it. It's such impactful music.
There's no need to bring the crowd down.
There's no need to bring us to that space, you know?
Yeah. So do you think someone like a Mick Jagger is watching this thinking, how are they going to play out my life when I'm gone?
Maybe. I don't, you know, I think it's hard when you make it to old age, you know, when you think of Keith Richards, Mick Jagger, Robert Plant, you know, do you want a story about the third act of your life? It depends on, I guess, what you're doing.
And the Rolling Stones, I mean, just for what it is, I mean, oh man, I mean, they're like 60 years, like, and I don't, when I say 60 years, I don't mean... like
life,
as an
you
age
mean like playing on stage.
There's 60 years in the studio. You know what I mean? Like, so if you look at Queen and Freddie Mercury, you're looking at, you know what, the 70s into the mid 80s, like, you know, maybe a 15 year span of time, like, tops.
Yeah.
Where you're looking at, you know, the Stones, I mean, they're what, the mid 60s to, I mean, they're still rocking, you know. It's like unbelievable.
It's amazing. Have you seen the Rolling Stones live?
Oh, I seen them live. Steeler Wheeler's tour.
Yeah, Steel Wheel. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, in Alpine Valley, Wisconsin.
Wow.
I saw them in, what was the one tour? I can't remember, but it was at Soldier Field in Chicago. Oh, man, I can't remember what the tour was. But yeah, I went with my dad, my stepmom, girlfriend at the time, you know, and some friends and everything, and my dad's friends. We took a limo down there. I mean, it was like awesome, you know. And but you know, I've seen the Stones a few times. I've seen Paul McCartney, Grateful Dead. I've seen the Stones, Paul McCartney, and Grateful Dead, and Bruce Springsteen all at Soldier Field.
Wow, that's amazing.
Bruce Springsteen would have been like, what, 84, 85 or something, you know, and that would have been, what would that have been? The Born to Run tour or something like that.
Yeah.
And that was in, at Soldier Field. I saw the Grateful Dead, which probably would have been like 87 or 88, you know, and oh man, all I remember of the Grateful Dead was like an hour of and you know, just the jam band, right? And you're right. And then all of a sudden they would go back into like, you know, Uncle John's Band or something, right? And you're just like, oh my god, it's still that song. You know, like, and you're just there like, I'm not high enough, you yeah. know, like, this is just ridiculous.
I went to about 4 Dead shows before I even ever went into a Dead show. Like,
oh, okay.
all of my friends were just big Deadheads, and I was like, I'm not into the music. I'm not into it. But I would go to the parking lot and just enjoy the tailgating with them. And then when the show started, I'd be like, all right, I'm fine out here by myself. There's enough people outside, you know, that didn't get their miracle ticket. So I was hanging out with them. But it's so funny because earlier this week we were talking about concerts at work. And I said to some young kids that work there, I went to the Guns N' Roses Metallica Stadium Tour.
Nice.
1992. And because we're in Washington, D.C., we actually were the opening venue for the kickoff of their tour.
We just lost our entire millennial audience.
No, it's so funny because like I mentioned this to these kids, the millennials, right?
Yeah.
And they said, didn't that just happen? And I'm like, maybe Guns N' Roses came around recently, because they came around like last year, which is a different Guns N' Roses than the Guns N' Roses I'm talking about, 1992 Guns N' Roses. But it was amazing. And luckily, the girl I was talking to was into Metallica, and she liked old school Metallica, Master of Puppets Metallica. So I was like, that's amazing.
Yeah, but no, I would love to have seen Queen. Obviously I never did, and well, maybe it's not obvious, but you know, I never did, and I don't, you know, I was old enough to know about them, but I was never old enough to like go to any of their shows or anything.
Yeah. No, it is incredibly impactful trailer, and like the movie looks like it can hold the weight that's going to be put on it by true fans of Queen, people that love the music and listen to the music religiously. And I think it builds the anticipation. There's that one scene where you can hear the riff building about 42 seconds in, it starts, and they're building that riff, and then they cut it out, right?
No, just when you start jamming.
Just when you're into the jam, and it's like, and then what is Freddie Mercury saying? This is where he put in the operatic section. It's just like, no, give it to me.
Let's talk conspiracy.
Uh-oh.
Are you familiar with backward masking?
Oh, yes. I know this one.
Oh, you do know this one.
I've tried to listen, but I don't hear it.
So Another One Bites the Dust.
Yes.
You know, so apparently if you play Another One Bites the Dust backwards, it's supposed to say like Another One Smokes Marijuana.
Right. I like marijuana. Try marijuana or something like that.
Yeah. It's like, you know, with the Beatles, right? Like, yeah. Paul is dead. You know, like, or what was Revolution Number 9? You know, like Turn me on, dead man.
Turn me on, dead man.
I remember going like to a seventh and eighth grade Christian school, and they would, you know, this is like mid 80s, and they were just so anti like rock and roll, anti movies. They were, you know, it was like this fundamental Baptist, Southern Baptist Christian school that I don't know how I got roped into, but I escaped. But anyway, so they would talk about like, you know, some songs and certain bands and things. And I specifically remember this one where they would talk about Queen and another one, Bites the Dust. And if they play it backwards, it's another one smokes marijuana.
Right.
And I was thinking like, well, okay, you know, I'm like, whatever I am, 13 or 14 at the time, whatever it was. And I'm thinking to myself like, all right, so what? Another one smokes marijuana. I'm not listening to the backwards version. I'm listening to the forwards version, you know, like, let me just read it the way I want to, or listen the way I want to listen, you know, and just enjoy it, you know. And then, you know, they got into like, you know, Led Zeppelin with Stairway to Heaven. And it was just all this stuff. And it was just like, oh, my goodness.
Can I have a little PSA, a little public service announcement about this back masking stuff?
Yeah, go for it.
It really ruins the needles on your LP player. Don't do it. The needles aren't meant to go backwards. They have grooves inside the diamond, inside the needle. And once you lay it down going forward, it's meant to go forward. When you start spinning it backwards, it's not good for the needle.
Thank you for that PSA, Ted Willett. But you know how we tested it in the past?
How's that?
So my dad had it on vinyl.
Yeah.
So what he did was he goes to this thing at my church when, like I said, when I was a little kid and, you know, well, I guess tween or whatever the heck I was. You know, he hears this thing and he's like, ah, you know, if you know my dad, you know, I mean, he's passed away now, but if you knew him, he'd be like, ah, this is bullshit, you know, and like, he would just be there like griping and stuff. So we go home that night, right?
Uh-huh.
And he puts it on and just what you said, don't play it backwards. So he records it, the album, because he had the album at home. And he records it to reel to reel.
Right.
And his reel to reel was able to play backwards at the same time meaning like the same speed that it could play forwards.
Mm-hmm.
So what it would play backwards, but it wouldn't engage the heads when it played backwards. So as long as he just pushed his hand against the heads, you know, to engage the heads,
oh, right.
you would get sound, right?
Yeah.
So he played it forward. We heard Another One Bites the Dust. Hey, hey, another one, but you know, whatever it was. And then he's like, okay, he hits play backwards and he just like pushes on the heads with his hands and we heard it backwards. Sure enough, Another One Smokes Marijuana. This is no bullshit. I'm not kidding. It was there. You know, like you got to listen because the thing is, what's the term that they would use? Like if you didn't know it was there, you wouldn't know it was there. But now that you hear it, you know?
Right.
And I think I don't think it was like meant to be there. I think it's just like you could play it. And if it plays like gibberish, it's gibberish. But if I like seed you with what it should say and then you listen, you're like, oh my God, it totally says that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
I don't know. I tried to listen to it. I don't hear it.
I don't hear it. No. Let me put it this way. Like if you really want to believe it's there, then yes, it's there. But honestly, I don't think it's Satan working through, you know, Another One Bites the Dust in Queen to say like, oh, Satan is getting you to smoke marijuana. But what he didn't say was it was medicinal marijuana. Another one smokes medicinal marijuana. You know, I mean, like, whatever, you know.
To regroup on Bohemian Rhapsody, were you able to check out? So at the end, they have the normal cards, but it has this cool other thing where it has a website at the end.
Yeah, I saw that.
And I don't know if you did this putmeinbohemian.com. And it's for a chance to have your voice included in the film. So I'm definitely putting Bryce in there because he loves Queen. He loves Bohemian Rhapsody. he sings it all the time. So sometime over this week, we're definitely going to check that website out. And I tried to go to it and I ran through some of the initial tests of it, but then it wanted me to have headphones and I was still at work. And I was like, ah, I'll do this later.
I mean, is that brilliant marketing or what?
Yeah, it's amazing to think that there's still parts of the scene, parts of the movie that they're going to, you know, loop some audience members audio into it, you know, and it's got to be like those huge crowds with the call and answers with the We Are the Champions or something, you know. I can't wait to do it with Bryce and maybe the whole family.
Well, and the funny thing is, okay, we're gonna put you in here and all this stuff, so you're gonna have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people, and all of a sudden it's like, oh my god, I'm gonna go see it just to see if I made it.
Well, you just talked about backmasking. People are gonna just like put themselves into it and they're like, oh, I think I heard myself in there.
And think about it, like, oh my god, I'm gonna be in there, and then you're gonna be like, oh my god, I hear myself, but like, it's just gonna be crowd noise.
Yeah, it's gonna be an amazing...
oh my god, I hear myself, you know, I heard my whistle, you know, like, yeah, oh my god, I heard myself go, oh yeah.
Well, you gotta go to the website, you gotta do the thing, and I actually did it on my computer, and it wants you to do it on your phone, and it wants you to have headphones. So I'm like, ah, okay, it's a whole production. Got to get the kids together, got to get the whole family together. We'll get the headphone splitters so all four of us can be on the same phone at the same time, and then we'll get it going.
Yeah, you know, and the last comment about that, though, I mean, like, talking about marketing, ultimately, I think that's kind of start to become the future of marketing, is where the pre-roll to the pre-roll to the pre-roll, like, you can only pre-roll it so many times.
Yeah.
Where, like, you have to just get creative to say, we need to get people into this movie in ways that people have not been into movies before.
Yeah, it's a whole department, you know, like, everybody talks about social, but it's really about engagement. You know, that's the key. And if you have me interested in a movie about Queen and Freddie Mercury and Bohemian Rhapsody, and I'm interested in it, and then you have me going to a website after I watch a trailer, then you've won the game. I think, you know, I think you're much further along than any of the other movies that we've reviewed, if I'm, you know, going to a website after watching a trailer.
The last comment that I wanted to make was, you know, you mentioned earlier about going to see this in the theater and see a theater with good sound and everything. And what I'm hoping is, like, that it makes it to an IMAX.
Wow. Yeah.
And the other side of it is, like, whatever theater I go to watch it, and I will definitely see this in the theater. I mean, like, there's no way around it. But whatever theater, I'm going to research the theater, and it might be here, like, in the Central Coast, or it might be down in LA somewhere. But I'm going to guarantee it's going to be a theater with the best sound system that a theater has. Because why would you not watch this on a good sound system? You know, and a matter of fact, the theater at, like, Universal City Walk might be the place to go see it. So, you know, some place like that.
We always go to the Burbank 16, and that has the Dolby Atmos. And to me, the Dolby Atmos is the type of theater you want to be in.
That's the top notch. Yeah, yeah.
It's not the IMAX. And I think there are some that are IMAX and Atmos. But I think, to me, the sound is going to be the important, is going to be.
Of course. It's all about the sound for something like this. It's just, it's all the music, you know? I mean, I don't care about the dialogue. It's all about, like.
Although some of this dialogue is phenomenal, too, you know?
But the dialogue doesn't require the great sound, though. I'm looking forward to it. All right, we beat it up. What's the three-word review?
The three-word review for this one is perfect trailer scoring. I don't know if you noticed the way they cut it together. I mean, we talked about that one time where they play into the operatic section, But every other part of this trailer has movies, has songs of Queen that are just blended together and layered on top of each other. When we do music videos at work, we often have to do cut downs, you know, where we do a shorter version. We do a 60-second version and a 90-second version so we can air the different versions in different, you know, places on TV. But whenever you do a cut down, whenever you're cutting up music, you almost have to get a good cut down, you almost have to go back to the original recording artist or original producers of that song and have them recut it after you cut it. So for these trailer producers, I'm sure that they laid something down temp, you know, and they temped in these pieces of music. And then they went back to maybe a top-notch producer, music producer, and had them re-record tracks all the way across, because I don't know that you could, that just an audio engineer at, you know, at a trailer house, no matter how talented they are, could blend together the music of Queen so seamlessly and so beautifully from one song to the next, including all the hooks and including the breaks and, you know, and then just layering it all in. So to me, again, the audio in this, I hope it feels like that this is like leading into some audio Oscars for next year, even though it's so early in the year. But I mean, it's not, I guess it's not early in the year. It's going to be November. So it will be fresh in the minds of the Academy. So I'm hopeful for a lot of things for this. I think Rami has a chance at doing, you know, elevating his career. And I think throughout, I think it's just going to be an amazing show.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that review. You're looking at original recordings, probably. You know, more than likely, it's original recordings. I don't think they're going to try and redo it. Maybe they will.
They did. He did do a little bit, I think.
Kind of like Joaquin Phoenix with the Line.
They definitely, Rami was definitely in the studio recording songs. So
he did
some of that stuff himself, and he went there. He did the deed. You know, he sang the work.
So with that said, I mean, they're certainly set up for an Academy Award, I think, in that regard. You know, we're early in the year.
It's so early to call it.
Our solo cup. I mean, he might be up for a solo cup. Who knows, you know?
Oh, I can't wait.
No, you know, ultimately, though, I think this is going to be awesome.
Yes.
I mean, I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
You know, this one's definitely, I think, going to be a theater. I don't want to say a blockbuster, but it's going to be one of those things that's going to attract a big audience.
It's going to have long legs. It'll start November and then it'll play through the new year, I think, you know?
Most definitely. Cool. So, all right, Ted. Well, hey, man. I think we had three awesome movies tonight.
Thanks for another great week. Definitely enjoyed.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, hey, you know what? How about we get together next week and do this thing all over again?
All right, we'll do it again.
All right, man.
Have a good night.
And another one bites the dust.
Next week, join Jim and Ted as they disarm another Hollywood bomb or marketing masterpiece. Remember, the holy trinity of podcasting. Subscribe, like, share.
Special thanks to Jeremy Kent Jackson for the voiceover and Rahelio for the music.